Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Last week we talked about the Arkansas oil spill with you and wanted to get into much more detail. We are joined here by Lisa Song. Lisa Song is a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter. She and Liz McAllen won the Pulitzer Prize this past week for their piece on Inside Climate News, the Dilbert disaster inside the biggest oil spill you've never heard of, and has been covering the oil spill in Arkansas. And welcome, Lisa. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So you have become the kind of a leading expert in the nation on on oil spills that nobody wants to talk about.
Elizabeth and I, and also David Hassmeyer, who won the Pulitzer with us, the three of us have been reporting on Dilbit and oil pipeline spills for a very long time. So it was just something we started to do, and we just kept going deeper and deeper. And, you know, over months and years, we've learned a lot.
So you have. And let's go specifically right now to Arkansas and then come back to some other things that you've been covering. But first of all, let's talk about the oil spill. When it happened, how it happened, but then I have some very specific questions that in your writings. Go ahead.
Sure. The oil spill happened on Good Friday, so it was March 29th. And the next morning on Saturday, I got a phone call from my publisher saying, hey, there's an oil spill, we should cover it. So I wrote a quick news story that Saturday, and what we were able to find out that day excuse me.
Bless you.
Was that the oil was indeed diluted bitumen or dilbit. That the oil was dilbit from the Canadian oil sand. And a couple days later, on the Monday after the spill, I went down to Arkansas to do some on-the-ground reporting and was there for about 3.5 days.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lisa. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Finish.
Well, the spill, you know, we still don't quite know exactly how much oil spilled. The EPA is estimating between 5,000 and 7,000 barrels. Now, each barrel is 42 gallons, so that's at least 200,000 gallons.
And one of the things that we've read about this is that there's been a no-fly zone over the oil spill, so reporters can't fly over, take pictures, and see what's going on. Is that true?
There was a no-fly zone imposed, I think, for a few days after the spill. It was eventually lifted. I'm not sure on what day.
But that's pretty outrageous. I mean, who authorized a no-fly zone? And one thing I read, whether it was true or not, was that the person in charge of it was the aviation coordinator for Exxon.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the details, but there was a no-fly zone, and the person you were supposed to contact to get permission to go into the no-fly zone was working for Exxon. It was on his LinkedIn page.
So how do you connect what you're covering in Arkansas with the Pulitzer Prize winning piece you all did on the Dilbit disaster in Michigan that was hardly covered at all by the major media? And you know, I look at your slideshow of the Mayflower oil spill, and we'll have that. All this is going to be connected on our website. You can go to insideclimatenews.org and see it. And it looks pretty devastating for not being covered. And I'm just, what are the connections for you between the two and for all these?
Well, they both involve oil from Canada, the diluted bitumen from the oil sands, and they both involve a pipeline rupture from a large break in a pipeline that caused the oil to leak out and basically flood a region. The spill in Michigan was much larger than the spill in Arkansas, and it went straight into a river. It contaminated 36 miles of a river. So that was a big story. And, you know, the thing about Michigan is that spill happened very soon after the BP Gulf spill. So maybe there was a feeling that, you know, the media was saturated with all this oil spill news, and that probably contributed to some of the lack of attention to the Michigan spill. This Arkansas spill, again, is a pipeline rupture, and they recently dug up the ruptured pipeline, and the crack there is 22 feet long, so it's a very big rupture. And again, this Arkansas spill there's been some problems getting a lot of media coverage on it, probably because the spill occurred in a suburban neighborhood, and it was very easy for local law enforcement to close off that neighborhood and make it difficult for reporters to access. And some of the other cleanup sites are also easily blocked off.
And I think this goes to the heart of the debate around the pipeline that still has not been decided on by President Obama, that would come to bring the tar sands oil from Canada. And part of this is also the work that you did in the Great Plains with people over the Ogallala Aquifer, and where the pipeline would run through. So, I mean, all these things are really connected, but it's difficult for some people to connect these dots. They're not connecting these dots. You are, but a lot of media is not.
It really is the same issue. And, you know, we started with reporting on the Keystone XL in Nebraska and South Dakota and then those states. And the concerns of the residents there who were asking us, what would happen if there was a spill on my land and the oil got into my well or my water? And we as reporters found it difficult to answer that question. We weren't finding the answers we needed to find. And that's what prompted us to look into the Michigan spill. And again, all of these issues, the Keystone XL, the Michigan spill, the Arkansas spill, they all involve the same type of oil.
And you said that several times. So what is this oil? So what is your perception and sense of what this means if this pipeline is built, given the disasters you've covered and the concerns some people have?
Well, the Keystone has really become a huge national issue, and it's been around for, I think it's been in the media spotlight for more than 2 years now. So there's a lot of interest on both sides of the debate to either get the pipeline built or to prevent it from being built. You know, the environmentalists are sinking a lot of time and money into various protests and advocacy work to try and persuade the Obama administration to reject the permit. And they're using the Arkansas spill as an example by saying the Arkansas pipeline was only one-tenth the capacity of what Keystone XL could be. So if the Keystone is built, there would be a much larger spill. And then the industry and people who support building the Keystone are also using the Arkansas spill because they say, you know, the Arkansas pipeline was more than 60 years old. It's an old, worn-down pipeline, and that's probably why it ruptured, whereas the Keystone would be a brand-new pipeline with state-of-the-art technology, and that would help keep fuel transportation safer. So it's something that, you know, very quickly the Arkansas spill became part of the national debate over Keystone, and it's being used by both sides of the debate.
And how do you see it in your reporting? What truths come out for you?
I think we're going to have to wait and see what happened with the Arkansas spill in terms of what actually caused the rupture. The exact cause won't be known for some time. They've just finished excavating the broken part of the pipeline. They have to send it to a lab for analysis. One thing I do want to point out, though, is the age of a pipeline doesn't necessarily correlate to how safe it is. You know, there are some very old pipelines. If they're well maintained, if the company takes good care of the pipeline, it can be very safe. And you can also build brand new pipelines. If they're not built well or well maintained, they won't be very safe. So I think, you know, there's a misconception that just because a pipeline is old means it's much less safe than something brand new.
Well, Lisa, I for one deeply appreciate the work you do and that all of you do there. It's really important, and I'm glad we can air it. I hope we hear more of the stuff that you do at Inside Climate News because you're doing great work, and congratulations on the Pulitzer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good to have you with us, Lisa Song. And we'll attach to the pieces that she's done and on Arkansas and the Dilbit disaster and more. And so you can also look at the Inside Climate News website and stay abreast of that. And it's been a very good show today. We've had a lot of going all over the place, and I'm glad you could stay with us and hear what we had to say today. I want to remind you on the way out the door, the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Henry, Bobby Marvin Holmes, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer tonight is Andrew Holt. Our intern is Lila Warshaw. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clear Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, please visit us on our website at steinershow.org. And you can also listen and download our podcast on iTunes and for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. It's Wealthy Lifestyles coming. Stay with us. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.